You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Over the middle, caught Saunders, Jalen Saunders, touchdown.
Harris to the end zone.
Mazzoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Into tight traffic, this looks like it's picked, it is picked by Richard Leonard.
On second down, Mazzoli looks for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch, touchdown. Beats two Ottawa defenders of the football, Pruno and Rowe. And Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Grimm.
Mike, it's been a while since you and I got to sit down and do one of these things for various reasons. You were, not to spill the beans, you're feeling ill a little while ago, so we had to cancel the recording. But it's nice to get back and talking some football with you. How you been?
I've been good. I'm just enjoying some of this nicer weather. You know, it took a while to get here, but sun is out and we're getting close to football season, my friend.
We are indeed getting close to football season. So close, in fact, that I was actually a guest on a fellow Canadian football podcast. I was on the Rouge Radio podcast last week discussing all things Hamilton Tiger Cats. When I'm on these season preview episodes of other podcasts, it starts to feel like, holy smokes, the season's getting here. We got mini camps coming up this week. The draft is a week from Thursday. We got, like, just the training camps is going to be here. And we're, like, 5 weeks away from the Ticats' first preseason game. Man, where did the time go? It just seemed to fly by. It seems long when you're thinking about it. But then once you get near the end of it, it's like, man, those 5-6 months just zoomed past us.
Yeah, it seems every year it goes by faster. I guess that's, you know, an age thing. As you get older, time flies, right? So I'm glad it's almost season time. Mini camps are starting up. I believe the Eskimos are in Las Vegas starting their mini camps. So yeah, it's getting real close, and I'm pumped about it.
All right. No one downloaded the show to listen to a couple of slapdicks talk about their lives and pontificate about tinier things about football. They want to hear us talk some real football stuff, right, Mike? So let's start Ticats wise. We'll start with the kind of the big news since the last time you and I sat down is that Ken Austin is no longer the, you know, guru of all things football in Hamilton. He stepped down as the vice president of football operations and is now a consultant with the team. Mike, what were your first sort of feelings? What was your initial reaction when you heard this news? Kind of came out of nowhere.
It did come out of nowhere a bit. I was a bit surprised. Now you could see it, you know, his role diminishing ever since Jim Jones came in. He stepped down as head coach. You know, it's not a huge surprise, I suppose, but yeah, his role keeps getting smaller and smaller. He used to be the head coach, the VP, sell peanuts, you know, clean the bathrooms, everything it seemed Ken Austin had his hands in. And now he's just a consultant. I mean, that's not a big role at all, as far as I know. I kind of wonder, is he making the same salary with all those jobs taken away? Not that I really care, but it was just kind of an interesting question to ask, you know?
Well, my feelings on this is, I think we're looking at the last season of Ken Austin in Hamilton. Yeah. I think we can kind of wrap a bow around the Austin era. I think I would be, and I actually said this to the guys over on Rouge Radio last week, I would be shocked if Ken Austin is still a member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats come a year from now. So I think, you know, I've talked to people, fans, of course, you know, coworkers that watch the stuff that, hey, Josh is the Ticats guy. This big thing happened with Ticats. Let's talk to him about it. And he's a coach, man. Ken Austin is a coach. That's what I keep telling people. He wants to coach. You could even tell last year when he stepped down as the head coach, he even said, like, at heart, I'm a coach. So you know he wants to coach somewhere. I don't know if that's going to be in the CFL. It's definitely not going to be in Hamilton. So I think it's pretty fair to say that this is kind of the end of Austin's run. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I suppose we could take a look back at his run in Hamilton, and you'd have to say it was a pretty damn successful run. They didn't accomplish their ultimate goal, which is, of course, winning a championship, winning a Grey Cup. But, man, did they come close. And, you know, we haven't been this close in a long time. So you gotta tip your hat to Austin at the job that he did here, even though he fell apart in that last season. The seasons before that were pretty darn good.
Well, I wrote about it for Three Down Nation, kind of looking at what Austin's legacy with Hamilton will be. And I think ultimately, like you said, it was a success. He kind of made the Hamilton Tiger Cats, we as fans, and I said this to you, I probably said on the very first episode we ever recorded, man, when this team kind of, and I always look at the 09 season as kind of the start of the renaissance here in Hamilton of football. Man, just making the playoffs, being relevant late in the season just felt so good that was enough for me. And then you get to the point where they had some playoff failures and they make some coaching changes. First, they let go of Marcel Belfin, brought in George Cortez, and things kind of hit rock bottom there. Then they bring in Ken Austin, and now we're starting to get to Grey Cups, and back-to-back Grey Cups in those first two seasons. And then it became, man, making the playoffs isn't good enough. We got to win a goddamn championship. And they didn't. And then you kind of saw the slide start to happen. And Austin is both sort of the steward of the ship when we were at the highest we've been in almost 20 years and the lowest we've been in that same amount of time. It's a very complex legacy that he leaves behind. But I think ultimately, when we look back at the years that he spent here, I think you can consider them a success. Two Grey Cup appearances, three East Final appearances, the playoffs 4 years out of five. The team never won a championship, and that's the ultimate goal. And I don't want to sit here and say that I'm okay with the lack of a title. I said right off the bat, I thought Ken Austin would bring this team a championship, and I was wrong. But overall, when you look at where Ticats football was 10 years before he got here and where it is now that he's kind of on the way out, it's in a much better place than it was when he got it, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think that the team that he's handing off to June Jones is a very well-built team. You know, a lot of things went wrong last year, obviously, but you can't really pinpoint it on the players necessarily. You know, it wasn't just one thing. So I think he's handing off a really good team that can be really successful for June Jones when, you know, this is June's team now. He may have not made the roster completely because, like I just said, a lot of the players are left over from Austin's era, but I think he left a pretty darn good team for June Jones to come in here and do his thing and win some ball games. And we talked a lot on the podcast when we first started that we said if Austin is here, the team will be competitive and competing for a Grey Cup every year. We were a little bit off on that, but minus one season, it was playoffs every single season.
It was, and I think everyone kind of asks, where did it all go wrong? When did this all of a sudden go from the team that was looked almost unstoppable to a team that pretty much couldn't get out of its own way near the end there? And we've talked about it so many times over the last 4 years, but man, just going back to that fateful day in mid-September when Zach Caleros tears his ACL, that was kind of the beginning of the end. We didn't know it at the time, obviously, but you look back, you kind of can trace all the bad things that have happened with this franchise since then to that point in time. And, it, you know, the team's not cursed. We as fans are not cursed. But, man, we were so close to being that juggernaut that we have envisioned our entire lives. There are people in their 50s that haven't seen Ticats football as good as we saw in that early portion of 2015. And then it was ripped away from us, and that kind of started this decline where everything just guys started leaving. We lost Tommy Condell, then we lost Orlando Steinhauer, and Zach Caleros never refound his form. And you just look at that and you wonder if you could go, if the multiverse exists and you can go to that other world, that other earth where Caleros doesn't tear his ACL, what could this possibly have looked like? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it could have been a Grey Cup championship. Now, I'm not saying guaranteed they would have won a Grey Cup, but they were the best team in the CFL at that point before Zach got injured. The offense was, you know, the best offense I think I've ever seen from the Ticats. It was productive on a very, very high level. The defense was really good. Special teams, Speedy B was back there tearing it up. I mean, this was a total complete team. And it's just unfortunate that that day in September, Zach really got injured with his knees. So, yeah, I think that was, you know, one of the points where it kind of started going downhill. And I also think that, like you mentioned, losing Condell and losing Steinhauer was, I have a feeling that those are more, those guys are more players coaches than Ken Austin is. So I think that there was a bit of a, you know, divide. They would deal with the players more and Ken Austin would be the leader head. And then when they were gone, it was just Ken Austin. And I think the players got a little tired of his rough nature, you know, his yelling and all that stuff. I think that could have had something to do with it as well.
Well, and now you see sort of the opposite of that with June Jones, right? You see a guy coming in who's very much low-key, very calming. There's definitely a difference in philosophy there. And neither, I'm not saying either philosophy is right or wrong. We saw Ken Austin be very successful.
Can both be right. You know, like exactly. when a team needs someone to kick them in the ass, then that coach can be great. And when a team needs someone to pat them on the back, then June Jones can be great. You know, it. I guess you could go maybe Ken Austin's length was a little bit long and the players just wanted something different. And it goes vice versa in all sports, right?
For sure. I look at Ken Austin and I look at June Jones and my comparison. I go to the NFL and I compare him. I say, Austin's Bill Belichick. June Jones is Tony Dungy. Both guys can be successful. They both won Super Bowls. They have different philosophies. And that's just the way it is. Certain coaches coach different ways. Wally Buono doesn't seem to be fire and brimstone, but look at Chris Jones, and both guys have been very successful. So there's, you can win with different coaching styles. It all depends on how you interact with the players. And for a lot of the time here, when Austin was around, this team was really successful. And when you're winning, you can kind of put up with everything. When you start losing, that's when things start, you know, that's when the rubber meets the road. You talked about great cups, you talked about great teams. Let's move on to talking about a guy who won the last Grey Cup this city's ever won. We heard last week the Wall of Honor was going to get a new inductee. Of course, since we are hashtag Hitch for Hall, we also became hashtag Hitch for Wall. And I won't say I'm disappointed, but because how can you be disappointed when the announced name is Joe Monfort? Like, if there's one guy who kind of typified late 90s, early 2000s Ticats football, it's big Joe Monfort. He was just a treat to watch, an absolute beast. His numbers with the Ticats are unimpeachable. 424 tackles, 115 sacks, and he had three straight seasons of 20-plus sacks, and he had four straight seasons of 19-plus sacks, 86 sacks over four seasons, a three-time Most Outstanding Defensive Player of the Year, and obviously was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 2011. That is a resume that gets you on the Wall of Honor if there ever was one.
Yeah, this guy was Tiger Cats football. I mean, look at that four-year span. It's just ridiculous. Let's take a look at here. 1998 to 2001, 21 sacks, 26 sacks, 20 sacks, 19 sacks. I would venture to bet that there has not been a four-year span with that many sacks with any player. I bet you that's a record. I could be wrong on that, but those numbers are just ludicrous. And the funny thing is, the year he had 26 sacks, he wasn't even the defensive player of the year for the Tigers.
He wasn't. That's the crazy part. He nearly breaks the record for sacks in the season, and his teammate, Calvin Tickle, was named Most Outstanding Defensive Player. That just tells you how loaded those Ticats defenses were back then.
Yeah, I mean, the linebackers were amazing. The front four was awesome. The secondary, Steinhauer, Carter, you know, just really take for granted how great those teams were back in the day. But, yeah, Monfort was – he was a beast, man. He was one of my favorite Tiger Cats of all time as well, along with Hitchcock and many others from those, 98 to 2000 teams. He just dominated. I've never seen – someone sacked the quarterback as much as Joe Monfort did. And maybe there's, you know, you could say Cam Wake and all that stuff, but Cam Wake only was here for 2 years, I believe. And I'm sure if he was here for a longer stint, he would put up similar numbers to Monfort. But for that four-year stretch, he's just untouchable.
Now, I'm sure that there's a little bit of Homer bias here, but for your money, greatest pass rusher in league history? Or at least greatest pass rusher you ever saw?
Greatest pass rusher I've ever seen, for sure. I won't say on the stop before I was born, but yeah, he was the most dominant defensive lineman that I've ever seen in this league. And he wasn't even originally a defensive lineman. He was a linebacker when he played for one of the U.S. expansion teams. I can't remember which one.
I think it was Shreveport. I think he played for Shreveport.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You are right on that. He was a linebacker. He came in, I believe Don Sutherland changed him to a defensive end, and what a decision by him. That was a great call by Don Sutherland.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too, and this should tell you how great Joe Monford was. Remember, he did spend a year up the highway wearing that ugly-ass double blue uniform, and then he came back, and no one holds it against him.
No, nope. I remember that was a big signing for the Argonauts. That was their, you know, they were marketing Joe Monford as one of their top players, if not their top player, and it made me sick. He is not an Argonaut. He is a Hamilton Tiger Cat, and it's amazing his production dropped off significantly in the sack category anyways in 2002 when he was with the Argonauts. The year before with the Tiger Cats, he had 19 sacks. The year with the Argonauts, 9. And he came back and had 13 sacks for with the Ticats again.
Yeah, he's Mr. Ticat. He's one of those identifiable faces for our generation from that team that won the Cup in 99. It's going to be awesome to see. He's been to the stadium a few times since he's retired, but it's going to be awesome to see him get sort of the whole halftime hullabaloo. Everyone's going to get a chance to kind of show their appreciation for what he did for the team. I can't wait to be there for that game. I believe they said it's late August that he's going to be going in. Just all around, completely deserving. And now that Monford's in, let's start the campaign to get Rob Hitchcock up on that wall, because if Monford's one, you know, Hitchcock's right there at 1B, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Hitchcock was obviously a tremendous player, but it even makes it more special that he's like a hometown guy and he'd be up on that wall. It would be amazing to see, and I'm sure it's going to happen eventually. So yeah, big congratulations to Joe Monford. Definitely well deserved.
All right, so now we got to talk about something that kind of pissed me off. It's also something I wrote about for Three Down Nation a few weeks ago. It came out after a very successful CFL week in Winnipeg that some teams had bid on it. Looks like it's going to be heading out to your neck of the woods, Mike. Looks like it's going to be going to Edmonton next March. And it was revealed that the Ticats won't be bidding on CFL week until stadium litigation is resolved. And this kind of set me off. And obviously it's been a few weeks now, so I've had a chance to calm down. But initially, I was furious, mostly because what does the stadium have to do with hosting something like CFL week where they don't really use the stadium for anything? And then it comes down to me of the city won't do business with an entity that's suing them, but the Ticats are only suing them because the city's also – like, there's just lawsuits abounding about this goddamn stadium. And I'm kind of sick and tired of this city kind of shooting itself in the foot and not giving itself a chance to showcase itself to the country, because this has to be by far the lamest reason not to bring a marquee event to Hamilton. And as a resident of Hamilton, as – essentially a lifelong resident of the city, it sickens me to see all the changes that have happened here and the positive things that we could get out and show everyone here in Hamilton to have it kind of torpedoed by the morons that run this city. And it bothers me to no end, because the excuses and the reasons are just asinine as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it just seems a little petty to me. I mean, obviously there's a rift between the Tiger Cats and the city of Hamilton. I don't know, like, the hard details about it, like why they're so pissed off at each other and everything, but it is very tiring. Hamilton, the stadium has nothing to do with CFL week. They could host the event without even going near the stadium. So it just comes down to pettiness with the city councilors and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And I lean to put the blame more on the city than the Tiger Cats, but I could be wrong in that evaluation. I'm not sure.
Oh, I put the blame entirely on the city. I think this is you said petty, and I completely agree. I hope this isn't the case, but this might stem all the way back from when the Tiger Cats said, "We will not play if you build a stadium on the West Harbor." That was nearly 10 years ago that they said, "We got to find a better solution for this. We can't play there. It won't work for us. Yada, yada, yada." And we're long past that, but we have the same mayor in power that was the mayor back then. Now, he was voted out of office and then back in, which is another stupid thing Hamiltonians do. They swap mayors like they swap underwear, and they bring – it's ridiculous. And part of me wonders if that's playing a role in this. Part of me wonders if this city just has an aversion – to success. Everything, like, I know you haven't lived here in a long time, Mike, but do you remember downtown Hamilton around Jackson Square kind of being a little sketchy? Didn't want to go down there. Didn't really want to spend time down there. You go down there now, and it is a completely different place. Restaurants are popping up. It's a place where people want to go. The movies, how many movies did you ever, you went to Jackson Square to see movies, didn't you, when you were a kid?
I mean, we traveled to Hamilton, and I remember going, not necessarily movies, but I remember going to the Jackson Square Mall back in the day. So, yeah, I spent my time in around Hamilton quite a bit, you know, before games and if we stayed for the weekend and whatnot.
Yeah, so, like, the city, like, downtown, like, the Jackson Square Cinema has been renovated, and it's a beautiful place to go watch a movie. The downtown core, it's been restaurants, they're the main thing, that are drawing people down there, and they're wonderful, and they are independently
owned. It's not just a steel city anymore, right? It's not just a steel city.
People have this vision of Hamilton and this idea of Hamilton as being the Hamilton from when they came and watched Grey Cup in 96. And it could not be more different. Yes, we still have the steel is still a very large part because of the skyline. You see the steel mills, but this is not the Hamilton.
I like that, though.
I do too.
Looking out of the stadium and seeing it. I don't know if you can still see them anymore at Tim Hortons Field. Okay. Yeah, I remember at Ivor Wynne you could see them. I thought it was, you know, it was neat. It was neat just to see that, you know, I like to imagine Hamilton is still that steel city reputation. And I think that they'll still have that for a long time. But like you said, it's changed a lot. You know, it's a big university town now, is it not?
It is. But it's still got the working class city attitude where people, they put their nose down, they do their work. And that's reflected in the football team. Hamilton fans love defense because it's hard nose. And that's what the people of Hamilton are. But it's not just that anymore. There is a lot of diversification in what we're seeing in Hamilton. It has grown exponentially for the better. It's not the city people remember from 20 years ago. It's not the city I remember from 10 years ago. It's much bigger. I hesitate to use the word better, but it has gotten better. And something like a CFL week would be a great showcase for the city to say, hey, this is the new Hamilton. And instead, we have pettiness and bitterness and just general jackassery from our city leaders that instead of coming together and reaching a conclusion to showcase the city on a national stage, they just say, nope, we're not doing it, and they move on. It's so frustrating as a resident of Hamilton. So frustrating.
And anything to do with the Tiger Cats, they say nope. I mean, they've been trying to make that soccer league for a while now, right? Canadian Premier League. And didn't the city say no to that too?
Something about your contract has run out. Yeah, they basically said no. It was something about they had a window where they had exclusive rights to bring a team here. And the city then said, well, after they announced they were bringing a team here, the city said, well, you don't have those rights anymore. And then this league said basically, well, if you don't give it to them, you're not getting a team. So it's like just every single thing has to be bogged down in unnecessary bullcrap. Like it's just it's no, 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 no until their hand is forced. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's frustrating. I don't live there. It's frustrating for residents of Hamilton. It's frustrating for me because I want to see Hamilton thrive. I want to see Hamilton get a Grey Cup, get a CFL week, all that good CFL stuff. You know, it's too bad because there can be a lot of money made for the city if they just open up their eyes, right?
Well, and that not just that, but it also makes me feel that as a Hamilton resident, as a Ticats fan, that we're not a part of the CFL community. Everywhere else gets all these things. Winnipeg gets a CFL week. Regina gets a CFL week. Everywhere else has had a Grey Cup in the last 10 years. We haven't had one in over 20. It feels like we're not a full member of this CFL community, and I feel like fans in Hamilton are missing out. We can go to Toronto for stuff, but Toronto's not Hamilton. We want things here to show off our city, and until that happens, I feel like we're kind of the ninth fan base kind of sitting on the sidelines watching everyone else enjoy things and getting to enjoy like the full aspects of being a CFL fan, where we always have to travel to places, we always have to go, like it's never here for us to be the hosts. And I think until that happens, Hamilton and Ticats fans aren't really part of the full CFL experience.
And then you look at the rumors that Calgary's going to get the Grey Cup next year, and you know it's the worst stadium in the league right now. I haven't been there since, like, I don't know, 2000 or something. But yeah, I mean, from all the stuff I hear, the Calgary is the most rundown stadium in the league, and they're getting a Grey Cup next year. So yeah, it's very disappointing.
Well, and Regina had one before that, and all the excuse. Well, Iverwind can't host one, and it's like. But then you see Saskatchewan get one in their dump of a stadium. And now, like you said, you got Calgary getting one in their crap hole. Like, it seems as if all the excuses that were used for no for Hamilton aren't excuses elsewhere. So it makes me wonder what the hell was going on back then when we were being constantly ignored because it wasn't good enough. But you see places that now aren't good. Like, it's just it's frustrating.
Yeah.
The overall feeling is I'm just frustrated as a fan. That's
right.
It.
And I remember seeing, like, city councilors or some, you know, some people that had something to do with the government in Hamilton or the mayoral office or city councilors or whatever, like, dissing the Ticats on Twitter. Like, I remember that a couple of years ago happening. So it's a very public thing, and there's a lot of bad blood, and I just wish it wasn't this way.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't that way either. Last bits of Ticat. It's not really news, but Mike, you hit up on our PodskiWeeWee Twitter account, at PodskiWeeWee, for those who aren't following that would like to follow along. Decided to post some fun little polls for fans to interact with us on. And why don't you tell everyone what you posted and what kind of the results were? Because I thought they were kind of interesting.
Alrighty. Well, I posted one. The first one I posted, my phone's being weird. First one I posted is, who's going to lead the team in receiving yards this season? I was going to put Chambers in there, Shamad Chambers, because he is the Canadian receiver or expected to be the number one Canadian receiver. But they didn't have – you can't make five options. You can only make four. So I had Tasker, Brandon Banks, Saunders, and Tolliver. And the fans think that Banks is going to lead the way. Not by much. It was close. 29% voted Banks, 26% Tasker, 21% Saunders, and 24% Tolliver. So, yeah, Banks, the fans think Banks is going to lead the team in receiving yards. And, you know, it's hard to argue that. Just on the second half of the season he had receiving, I mean, almost he had over 1,000 yards in one and a half a season. So I could see it totally happening.
It's crazy when you look at the numbers. 29 was number one. 21 was number four. Like, there's a lot of diversity in who people think is going to lead the team receiving. The guy who finished in fourth place actually led the team receiving last year. So it's kind of great. It just, I think it shows you, or at least what I'm seeing, is there is some sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? There's optimism. There's optimism with this offense. There's optimism with these players because there was no runaway winner. If there was one guy who was at 50% and no one was even close, then the team's kind of relying on one guy. You know what I mean? But I think fans look at this and go, all these guys are dangerous. That's exciting. That's exciting. The season's starting soon. And to think that all of these weapons could potentially, not saying they will, but could potentially all crack the 1,000-yard mark this year, all have the ability to post 10-plus touchdowns. Again, not saying all of them will, but they all have that potential. That's pretty exciting as we head into the new season.
Yeah, and a guy like Tolliver coming back. I mean, he was out all last season. You know, major injury, but obviously there's a lot of confidence that he's going to bounce back and have a really good season. You know, you look at the other guys, Tasker, Money, Brandon Banks, Speed Demon, Saunders, same thing. A lot of speed, a lot of good hands on this receiving core. And you look at a guy like Shamad Chambers. Came in very limited in his games. He played for the Ticats last year. But when he was in there, he looked really good. So that's another guy that could, you know, maybe push 500, maybe even more. Because we've always talked about Shamad Chambers underperforming in his CFL career. Well, maybe this is finally the year that he has a breakthrough season.
Well, and the thing with Tolliver, too, that's exciting is we've never seen him in a June Jones offense. What could he do in that offense? Like, this, it's just an exciting time to kind of be a Ticats fan. And with the season right around the corner, I look at this and I go, oh, I just can't wait till the balls are flying through the air and we're watching some football again. You posted
the second. I just want to say I have high expectations for this season. Maybe we shouldn't, or maybe I shouldn't, but that's just how I feel. I have a good feeling about the Ticats
this season. Hey, the Argos went from worst to Grey Cup champions. Why can't the Ticats?
Yeah, and okay, so the second poll I posted on the Podski WeWe Twitter account is what's your guys and gals' thoughts on Andy Fantuz? Will he be playing for the Ticats next season? And this one was close as well. 51% say no, 49% say yes. What do you think, Josh?
This is kind of tough because my heart says I want number 83 back in black and gold, but my head says we're pushing towards May and we haven't heard a damn thing about it. I'm leaning towards he might not play anywhere again, and I don't know. If he does play and it's not in Hamilton, I'm kind of concerned to where it might be.
Yeah, I know. That's my concern as well. Like he came from Saskatchewan to the Ticats partially because he wanted to be closer to home. And my worry is that he's going to travel down the QEW and be in that dirty, dirty, double blue Argos jersey next season. But you never know. I don't think he'll be back to the Ticats just because, like you said, it's getting really close to the season. We haven't heard a damn thing. And I remember a while ago we heard something that they were talking, and I don't know. I guess it broke down. But I could see them going with Chambers and the backup receiver there that had a tough year last season. I'm blanking on the name.
Mike Jones.
Yeah, there you go. Mike Jones. So he had a tough season last year, but there's potential there still. So he could be you got one solid starter in Chambers and a potential starter down the road in Mike Jones.
Well, and let's not forget that the Ticats have five picks in the top 20 of this upcoming draft.
Yeah.
Maybe they look receiver there. There's some interesting receiving prospects. So as much as I'd love to see Fantuz back here, I think a couple years ago we saw that he could still perform at a very high level. I know at some point you got to say goodbye to the veterans. We've seen it happen numerous times over the years. I just would really like to see him back for one more go, especially if this team is on the precipice of maybe turning it around, perhaps finally winning that goddamn Grey Cup that has eluded us for so long. It would be nice if Andy Fantuz was there to celebrate in that championship. You know, like there are certain guys, I think we've talked about this before when we saw, I think Craig Butler, when he retired, I think we talked about it. There are certain guys that have been with this team that you kind of wanted to see be there when the team finally achieved the ultimate goal. Fantuz is one of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I was just thinking about Earl Winfield. He was on the 89 team, right?
He was on the 89 team, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to say he just missed out on the – because I think he retired in 97, so he missed out on those 98-99 teams, which is too bad.
He came in 87, so he missed the 86 cup, but he got to play in the 89 cup. And then, he retired in 97 and missed the two and never got a chance to actually win a Grey Cup, which is – The one sort of missing thing from who is by far my favorite player in Ticats history, I think everyone who's listening to this is aware of that. It kind of sucks that he never got his name on that Grey Cup. Andy Fantuz is a Grey Cup champion, won one with the Riders, but it would be nice to see him win one with the Ticats just because it would be, again, like a Rob Hitchcock, like a Mike Morreale, kind of a local guy, even though he's not exactly from Hamilton, he's from the area-ish. He's one of those guys, it would be so nice to see him get his name on the Cup underneath Hamilton finally breaking the drought. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I was watching the highlights from the 86 Grey Cup recently, actually, because I never really watched it. I mean, I was only 1 year old when it happened. But do you think Mike Kerrigan is underrated in Ticats lore?
You know, Mike Kerrigan was a little bit like, I remember Mike Kerrigan slightly, but I don't remember a ton about Mike Kerrigan because, like, you were one. When they won in 86, I was four. Turning five in the following January. So it's like I do remember the 89 Grey Cup is the first one I remember actually watching, and I remember being really good. I'm not necessarily sure if he's forgotten or underappreciated. I just, because he never won a championship, I think that's like he's kind of lumped in with
he did win 86.
You're right. My bad. But maybe fans don't give him the credit he deserves. Right. But I always remember when I was younger, people, I don't know why I thought this, but people, like, they didn't hate Mike Kerrigan, but they didn't think that he was, like, they thought that he was a good quarterback, but not a great one.
Not the top level.
No.
Of the CFL. Right. Yeah, I just didn't have a good grasp on it because
You were, you know, so you young.
Look, yeah, and you look, and he's like, he won the 86 Trey Cup as a starting quarterback. He was in the 89 one. So, yeah, I just I don't know how he played throughout the seasons and all that. Maybe the defense kind of carried him or whatnot. But, yeah, I was just kind of wondering what the feelings were on Mike Kerrigan, because you don't hear him mentioned that much.
No, it'd probably be interesting to talk to, say, Ticat fans who were born maybe in, like, the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah,
maybe
hit us up.
They would have
up,
a better grasp. Because, right. Like, when you and I think, because we're close to the same age, we're not exactly the same age, we're close enough, our team is that late 90s team, right? Like, those are the guys that we identify with. Those are the guys that really, even though we both had a love for Ticats football, it's that team, that era, that really kind of solidified it as being kind of, like, in our blood. It's like, we look back on those teams. There's a reason when we do the retro game reviews, we're doing them from 98 and 99. Like, that's the era where we kind of, man, the Ticats, they were the best team in the CFL essentially over those 2 years. They only won one Grey Cup, but they could have won both. You know what I mean? Like, that was an era where it was very short-lived, but man, were they so talented. And we look at those guys, and those are the guys that we look at, the McManuses, the Fluties, the Monfords, the Hitchcocks, though, like, even the role-playing guys like an Andrew Greig or like Ronald Williams, who wasn't a role player, but maybe a guy that's kind of forgotten to time.
Archie Amerson, whatever,
yeah,
whatnot.
That's our youth's team.
That's our team.
So maybe that mid-80s, early 90s team, if we look to the, say, not necessarily the generation before us, but people who are maybe, you know, 8 to 10 years older than us, maybe they would have a better take on Mike Kerrigan. So, yeah, if you're listening to this show and you're kind of in your, you know, early to mid-40s, hit us up with some opinions on Mike Kerrigan, because it's kind of a blind spot, I think, for Mike.
Yeah, totally agree on our Twitter, your Twitter, our Instagram, whatever. Just let us know what your thoughts are on Mikey, because I'm very curious about this.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe we'll come back next week or next time we have a show, and if people give us some good feedback, we'll talk a bit more about Mike Kerrigan. Okay, that's moving on. Let's talk some CFL news, Mike. The big news since we last sat down, John Chick, former Hamilton Tiger Cat for a year and a half, hung up the cleats. He's retiring as a member of the Edmonton Eskimos. Man, what a great career. The dude was, we talked about Joe Monfort. This was kind of this generation's Joe Monfort. If he would have played with the Ticats for his entire career, he'd be looked at as the Joe Monfort of the late 2000s. And what a career he had. It was a pleasure to watch him play for the Ticats. Goes out, 2 Grey Cup rings. Obviously, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame one day. Just an all-around great career that's maybe not ending too early, but a little bit surprising maybe that he's hanging him up now, because I thought he was pretty good last year.
Yeah, he was pretty good. He came in, Edmonton did a pretty good job once he got traded from the Ticats. But, great career. It was really fun to watch him play. He was a great player out there, rushing the quarterback, you know, getting all those quarterback sacks. You know, he played with diabetes, I believe, which is, you know, a tough thing to live with. And he was just a hard worker, a good teammate, and a great teammate from what I've heard. You know, I don't know personally, but all the things I've heard from other players is he was a great teammate and a great player. So, yeah, I guess he'll always be remembered as a Ticat, though. That's the team.
Once a Ticat, always a Ticat. Is that the saying?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that's for every team. But
yeah, I think it is too.
But yeah, good on him. Good on him.
Yeah, it's a shame we won't get to see him play anymore, but it was a pleasure to watch him ply his trade. And speaking of trades, that deal to send him to Edmonton for the Ticats now, like, not to be crass, but man, it looks a lot. Like, I liked it at the time. Really looks good now, considering they got, I believe, the 10th overall pick or maybe the 15th. They got a second round pick, so I can't. It's in the mid, I don't know, 12, 13, something like that. For a guy that Edmonton got for what, 8-9 games? That's a pretty good trade for the Tabbies.
Yeah, it looks pretty good for them now. You know, Edmonton was thinking about, you know, making a push for the Grey Cup, bringing in that one more player to maybe put them over the edge. It didn't work out that way, but I'm happy to have, you know, that second round pick along with all those other early round draft picks that we have this draft coming up.
So speaking of the draft, we're not going to go into that, but a former first overall pick of the draft finally found a new slash old home. Enoch Mwamba, who seems to get released every offseason and goes on kind of a whirlwind Canada tour to find a new address to apply his trade at, he finally found a home. He signed with the Montreal Alouettes, who famously, what was it, 2 years ago, cut him when he was due a roster bonus after they made a big splash in signing him at the end of the season. So now he goes back to Montreal, Are we going to be going through the Enoch Mwamba thing again a year from now?
I don't know, man. It's such a weird thing to have such a great player, such a great Canadian player being released like this every year, just simply not because of his play on the field, but because of his salary. That's what I get from it anyways. And yeah, it's very strange to go back to a team that kind of, you know, screwed you over out of a lot of money, probably. To go back to that team 2 years later is kind of weird, but I'm sure that Montreal showed him the money and was probably the top bidder like over everyone else. So that's probably the main reason why he's in Montreal.
Well, and you got to think with what he commands as a salary, high, you know, 180, 190 into the 200,000 a year range. Teams, by the time he got released, they had kind of earmarked their money to places. It happened after free agency opened. Montreal was really the only logical choice, and I know people are going to crap on the Owls, and yes, they still have a problem at the quarterback position. Word out of the mini camp they had, I think it was last week, was that Drew Willey looked the best of all the quarterbacks, and that is a scary proposition. Yeah. But that said, if you look at that Montreal defense, and they spent a lot of money to upgrade it, that could be a really fearsome unit. They're going to hold teams to very few points. The problem they're going to have is scoring points, but man, that defense looks like it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, they, you know, you just look at the team on paper, and they definitely improved their talent from what they had last year. I think they got a little bit younger. So, yeah, they did a lot of good things in the offseason, I think. And the only big question mark is that quarterback position. And, you know, you'd think Josh Freeman's going to be the guy. I don't know if they've outright said that he's pegged in to be the number one guy, but yeah, I mean, if Drew Willey's looks the best, that's a little concerning. Drew Willey had a lot of potential early on in his career, and you know, who's to say that he can't get that back? But man, the years in between were really, really bad for Drew Willey. So overall, I think they've done a lot of good things, but you know, the most important position on the field is quarterback, and that's their concern.
That's just it. I'm still picking him to finish last in the East. Spoiler alert for, you know, a month or so from now when we're sitting down and doing, I guess 2 months from now, when we're sitting down and doing our season preview episode, I'm still going to probably have the Owls finishing fourth because you got no quarterback. You got too many question marks as far as I'm concerned. If you have the quarterback settled, then everything else can fall into place. If you don't have it, I think no matter what accoutrement you put around him, even on offense and on defense, you got to have the guy under center. If you don't have
and a rookie there, head coach too, and a rookie head coach too.
Yeah, who's so, like, who also participated
to the CFL.
Yeah, but he participated in this weird, you call the play football league. Did you hear about that?
I did. I didn't read into it too much. I saw the headline.
I just was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, it seems like
it's odd.
It seems like an odd league. I read somewhere that the Owls, they knew that he was going to do this and they were okay with it, which is fine. But at the same time, it's like, I couldn't imagine like any other CFL head coach participating in something like this because they're too focused on, you know, making their CFL team better. And again, it's not a slight to Mike Sherman. I'm not trying to dump on the Owls. It's a really odd scenario.
Yeah. And I forget who it was, but one of the beat reporters, I think he worked for RDS, just said, he tweeted out the article about Sherman coaching in that league, and he just wrote SMH, you know, shake my head. So I don't know. I don't know if people are looking down on that or what's the deal. I've never heard of this league. You know, I hear about leagues that, you know, they just pop up. And I'm like, well,
yeah, right.
Like the spring league. Like, I never heard about that before this year. So yeah, it's a very strange move. I think he should be focusing more on the Alouettes, obviously, but, you know, maybe it's just a one game, two game thing like the spring league. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Last bit of news. This is not, you know, really important, but I wanted to touch on it. We found out through the Argos new president that they are ditching the team sponsored tailgate. And this kind of caused somewhat of a controversy, wouldn't be the right word, maybe a little bit of an uproar, maybe some outrage. That the team would be getting rid of the tailgating area. And I heard this story and didn't really, like, I never went to the Argos tailgate. I'm not an Argos fan, not an Argos season ticket holder, so it didn't really affect me. But at the same time, I have been to tailgates in Hamilton. They're not team run. They are, it's in kind of a secluded area, a couple of, maybe about a 5 minute walk from the stadium. That's, you know, there's drinking, there's barbecuing, there's a lot of fun to be had. And, you know, the authorities kind of turned a blind eye to it, and it's a pretty rollicking good time. I just don't get why the Argos couldn't. Now, I don't know what the laws are. Like, obviously, the laws are very similar, but I don't know if maybe police are a little bit more, you know, dickish, for lack of a better term, in Toronto, and they wouldn't necessarily turn a blind eye to this. But if Argo fans can cultivate sort of a tailgate culture, does it really matter if the team kind of sponsors it? I didn't think it did.
Well, I was kind of disappointed at the news, you know, just because the first year they were in BMO Field, they were just hyping this tailgate, like, more than the actual games. It was more of more about the tailgate than the actual football game. So I just don't see. I get it. It's a money thing, but like with a organization like MLSC behind them now, Rogers, Bell, Tannenbaum, you think that they'd be adding to the experience, not taking away. That was my only gripe. I think it'd be great if they do what Hamilton does. Edmonton has one in the parking lot that isn't team sponsored either, and it's a great time. Calgary does it as well, I believe. A really big tailgate in Calgary that's really successful. So, you know, maybe I overreacted at first. I do like some of the things that they announced, especially the lowering of ticket prices. I mean, that's just had to happen. The tickets were more than TFC, and I'm not comparing the two products. I'm just saying that TFC is a way hotter ticket than the Argonauts. So lowering the prices is a very good thing. I just thought that, they'd be adding stuff, not taking it away.
No, and that's fair. You would think with adding the clout of MLSE behind it that they would be expanding their reach and not restricting it in a way. But at the end of the day, it's about the product on the field. And if the Argos provide an entertaining product with the marketing muscle of the entire force of MLSE behind them, it can turn this around. One of the things they're doing is they're cutting, I believe it's the upper deck on the east side of the stadium, they're cutting off from ticket sales. Yeah, it's going to make it a little bit more cavernous, but if you cluster everyone together, I think it'll make for a much better atmosphere. So yeah. I think they're doing things to... This is a long-term rebuild, and I think we all need to accept that. They're going to try things that are going to work and not work, and they're going to take things away, and they're going to add things. Like, this is... They're going to do everything they can, and it looks like they're going to do everything they can. Like, this looks like an ownership group that is in it for the long haul. They're not in it to... They're not Johnny Come Lately, you know what I mean? Like, this feels like this is going to be stable, and they're going to do everything they can to turn this into a money-making endeavor. And if they got to take away tailgate to make that work for a few years, maybe they bring it back, maybe they don't. I think it's a good thing. I agree with you in a sense that, yeah, it's kind of surprising that they would take stuff away. But, again, it's all in the interest of trying things to make this work. And if they do that, then, you know, more power to them.
Yeah, and if there's more people in the stands, then so be it. Like, if they take away the tailgate, but there's 16,000, 18,000 people in the stands, then I'll be happy. That's good with me.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Mike, that's it for this week. It was nice to kind of get the muscles flexing because, we...
Whoa. I guess we should mention the new linebackers coach that was hired today.
I didn't see that.
For the Tiger Cats.
Oh,
yes.
Breaking news, Mike?
Well, somewhat about an hour ago, I think. I just saw it here on the Tiger Cats website. Robert Lyles has been named the special team, or no, not the special team, the
linebackers coach.
I know. It shows how messed up my brain is. But yeah, apparently he brings over 20 years of coaching experience to the Tiger Cats at both the professional and collegiate ranks. This is weird. I've never heard of this place before. Last year, he was the defense and outside linebackers coach at the University of the Incarnate Word.
What?
Yeah.
That's got to be like a religious school.
I guess so. But he played in the NFL for a while. I think that there's a tie to Glanville. I think he played under Glanville when he was playing in the NFL.
You know what I was going to add? I was going to say, what are his ties to Jones or Glanville? Mm. Because if he's a linebackers coach, this is probably Jones going to Glanville saying, you want a linebackers coach? Who do you want? Let's go get him. Or it's Jones saying, I know a guy. You know, so I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to add. That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, so interesting resume. I mean, he's been around for a while. I don't think he ever...
No CFL experience?
No CFL experience. Lyle spent two seasons working under the NFL's Minority Coach Fellowship Program and completed internships with the Buffalo Bills 2003 and Tennessee Titans 2004. But I got to look up this this university that he was coaching at last year, because I've never heard of it. But
again, the University of the Incarnate Word.
Yeah, that's it.
That is a mouthful.
Mm-hmm. So, new linebackers coach Robert Lyles.
I imagine they got him in for minicamp that starts on Tuesday.
Yep.
All right. Well, good piece of last minute info there, Mike. Thanks for that. And man, like I said, minicamp starts on Tuesday. Football season is right around the corner. It was nice, as I was saying, to sort of loosen up the old podcasting muscles and kind of get back in the swing of things, because sooner than we think, Mike, you and I are going to be sitting down doing this every single week for about 25 weeks. Crazy. The season is almost here.
Yep, hopefully it'll be more enjoyable than last year's podcast week to week.
At least at the start of the season. At least, yeah, Mike, that was a rough first 8 weeks for us.
Yeah. But it's funny, more people listen when they're terrible.
That's true.
So
when they start, I don't know. That is and you know what? Okay, I'm going to throw this out to the listeners out there. If you listen more when the team lose, like, are you someone that listens every week? Because I know we have some very loyal fans. Speaking of which, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot to mention this. Someone bought the Mike Ticats shirt, and I'm so happy about it.
Yeah. My buddy from the Netherlands. He's a great guy. He was one of the Super Cup crew. Yeah. I was surprised. I didn't know. I had no clue who bought
That's
it,
awesome.
Obviously, at first. And then he sent out that tweet, and he was wearing it with his Ticats helmet on. And yeah, he's a great guy, and flattered that someone would buy that T-shirt. Really.
I love it. Absolutely love it. But anyway, Mike, great episode. So that's it for us this week. You can find the show anywhere you get your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, all those places. Or you can go to 3.9.
Podbean.
Yeah, for them too. we're always looking for interactions. We posed some questions to you guys this week. We'd love to get some feedback, especially on the Mike Kerrigan thing. I'd love to talk about Mike Kerrigan because, like I said, it's a little bit of a blind spot for Mike and I. So it's kind of a little bit before our time. So if you got any Mike Kerrigan stories or just want to, you know, say anything to us, you can always hit us up on the social medias. We have our own personal accounts. We have the @PodsKiwiWee account. Mike, where can they find you?
Mike_Ticats.
I am JoshSmith_82. And Instagram @PodsKiwiWee. You can always talk to us on there as well. Mike's usually posting some pretty dope pictures, if I do say so myself, especially about that 98, 99, 2000 era team. And of course, always throw those comments and questions in the 3Down Nation comment section. Mike, that was episode 105 of PodsKiwiWee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CFPod Network on Twitter.